That's actually a perfect metaphor for what we're talking about, the history of radionics. Radar love. You know, could a song that somebody recalls a disc jockey to play for somebody else, when they hear that song, is it communicated to them through the radio technology what the person who is sending the song out to them wants them to experience? In a way, I mean, you just look at that as sort of an analogy for radionics, adjusting somebody else's physical experience by using something like, you know, the art of music. So it can be very healing. Can radionics work like that on its own? That is, you know, non-musically speaking. We'll talk about that next with Duncan Laurie. The Secret Art, coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. All right, The Secret Art, a brief history of radionic technology for the creative individual. You can link up to Duncan Laurie through coasttocoastam.com. Same thing with Al Jardine, who we had on the first hour. We all kind of talking about the same thing, it seems, and that's good vibrations. So Duncan Laurie was talking about the radionics technology device, the oscilloclast that was developed by its inventor and sold for years and sold in our different forms for years. What does the original oscilloclast claim to be able to do?
Well, the original device was just used for diagnostic purposes, being able to determine what type of disease a person had.
Okay. And then how did it move from being able to diagnose a disease to being able to cure a disease?
Well, I think the idea was that if you had a certain resonance that was being broadcast by the tissue, that if you inverted the resonance or you applied intent through in a curative way to rebalance the organ or eliminate the disease, that you would wind up with a potential healing scenario.
Okay. And so as Albert Abrams was doing these experiments, what was his success rate? What did he scientifically demonstrate he could alter the frequency of, and how long did the cures last?
Well, that's, you know, that I don't know if I could answer that question, because I don't think there's any data I've ever seen about what his percentage of cures were. So to be fair to the listeners, I honestly can't say. I think they were significant enough that he drew a lot of heat and he got a lot of interesting people into his laboratories to examine what he was doing.
Okay.
But I think when it comes to describing, I know you want to get to the idea of how does something like this heal? And
right.
It's an excellent question, which can't be ducked. But I can't answer it based on what happened to other people in there many years ago. But I could give you maybe three short personal stories that might give you some indication of how I think it works, but that's just conjecture on my part.
No, it's not conjecture if it's personal testimony. It's anecdotal.
Okay,
but I would say it's above conjecture. Tell me what examples do you want to give?
Okay, well, for 10 years prior to the publishing of this book, I worked with an electronic engineer named Gordon Salisbury, who was deeply skeptical of all of this stuff. But he knew how to design instruments, and he knew he understood electronics. So we acquired a lot of early radionics devices and in one way or another put them through various tests to try to see what their capabilities were. I can honestly say, based on our research, that we, using modern electromagnetic technology, we could not detect any specific energy coming out of one of these devices. In other words, it wasn't generating a thing. And this will probably get me in a lot of hot water with a lot of radionics manufacturers, but it shouldn't, and I'll tell you why. at the very end of our work together, we made friends with a man named Larry Banks, who was an artist healer. He is also the chair of the Media Arts Department at Long Island University in Brooklyn, New York. So here's a guy, he's well-educated, he's a filmmaker, he's a healer that goes out in the streets and heals people. He doesn't charge. He's a legitimate, loving human being that does this because he has an aptitude to do it. When we brought him into our laboratory at that time and set up a couple of experiments that he wasn't even aware was going on, Larry's healing energy that just came off of his hands, no touch, nothing, no contact with a person, but the energy that came off of him was able to move meters in our lab. So we had to say, look, whatever's going on with this guy, whatever capacity he has, there is an energetic component. It showed up on these electromagnetic instruments. So there's the first. That's the first installment of the story. Can I go further, or do you have?
That's great.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, look, around the same time, but maybe a year before, I'm sitting at a friend's house with some very gifted individuals, and with me is my 9-year-old daughter. And the next thing I know, these people have taught her how to bend spoons. Have you ever seen this done?
I have seen it. I know exactly what you're talking about.
All right. Well,
you're talking about you put this between your forefinger and your thumb, and by using the heat being generated from your fingers plus a gentle wiggling, kind of oscillating the spoon, you can get the spoon to weaken kind of at the fulcrum of your fingers at its thinnest point.
These weren't just being bent. These were being twisted around and, I mean, really contorted.
Okay.
And, you know, it's one thing you look at a strong man and say, yeah, you know, he just might be able to do that. But a 9-year-old girl, I'm not so sure. Anyway, I was very impressed with this phenomena. And I didn't associate it at the time with anything to do with a healing, potential power to heal. But then last January, I was down in Puerto Rico with my family. I have two young girls. My wife and I were ducked into a restaurant a storm was coming on, and we had to get out of the weather. And we sat down and we had dinner. A young man came over to us who said, would you like to see some card tricks? And I said, yeah, why not? You know, it's So he began to show us some card tricks, and the next thing I know, he pulled a quarter out of his pocket, and he put it between his teeth, and he stretched it like a piece of rubber, like a piece of toffee or elastic. He just pulled this thing straight out, and then he pulled it back together and crimped it together with his fingers and handed us a quarter. Well, this could have been a good trick. Who the hell knows what he was really doing? But it was impressive. And immediately something in my mind went off, spoon bending. The next thing he did was, now my daughter is 11 years old, and he takes her fingers, her little finger, and he bends it just like it's a piece of rubber. I mean, he contorts this into like a... So there was no bone or muscle or nerves at all in it. And my wife and I, my older daughter, were looking at this like in astonishment, right? So at the time, this perked in my mind. And a month later, my brother went back with his family, and they contacted this same young man whose name is Eduardo Pignatoro. And he's like 20, 21 years old. He's very unpretentious about the skill. So my brother got him to do the same thing, except even more extreme, with his, you know, using his hand. He was able to twist. Eduardo was able, my little nephew was able to push Eduardo's hand all the way around 360 degrees as he held it flat on a table. And my brother filmed this. I have the film of him doing it. And a lot of other things like this. And so, you know, I was left with I was left with the conclusion that either this is a mass hallucination of some kind, or the man has some extraordinary degree of control over his body, or perhaps he's able to use his intent and his focus to actually change the biological characteristics of his body in such a way that he can do something that supposedly nobody can do. If you take that last supposition as possible, then I think that you can understand why a person who trains to heal with a device of some kind, of some type of design, might be able to insert this limited ability of the control over matter into a specific context and create an open-ended situation where the dynamics could change and an unhealthy condition could be restored to a healthy condition. Now, I know that's not proof, and it's not scientific, and it's not anything, except a personal experience. But it's the closest I've come to seeing a mechanism that potentially could explain the way alternative healing modalities work, and something that is rigorously avoided by scientific people in terms of trying to make a better world for us. So, there it is. I'm sure millions of your listeners have seen similar things in similar strange contexts. And, why don't we look into this a little bit more? What's the harm?
No. The Secret Art, A Brief History of Radionic Technology for the Creative Individual. So, as I read from the wiki page, they say there's no empirical proof of radionic technology being able to heal people. But I wonder whether there is another way of looking at radionic technology that we haven't addressed. Maybe you do in the book, and I thought I've read everything in the book, but maybe I missed this part. Could there be people who industrially are exposed to a certain amount of positive, good radiation? And I wonder whether there's anybody that, whether it's because they work in a lab or they work around certain types of music radiation, where they're around vibrations that make them live longer. I wonder if anybody's ever done a study of health and longevity based on exposure to various forms of energy waves. What do you think?
I haven't heard of one. It certainly sounds like, given the commercial potential for such a technology, somebody will look into it if they haven't already, if it's feasible.
Well,
a moneymaker.
I compare that to something like, how they always, like the old commercials where they talk about how all the people in Russia that lived to be 110 because they eat yogurt. And they were eating yogurt for, centuries before they realized that it has an effect on your life in a positive way. And I just wonder whether there might be somebody out there that by occupation, people live longer because of the positive radio waves that they experience.
Well, I think if you look at the opposite of this, at least there's this study, the China study, about the relationship of nutrition to disease. So if you invert that question, you say, is there things that we do that shorten our lifespan? Yes, there is a major world-class study came out of Cornell about how certain things we eat will definitely cause disease in our body. So one would have to assume the opposite's true.
What was in that particular study? Do you remember what the headlines were?
Animal protein. Primarily animal protein. What they had in China was populations with open medical records and a strong contrast between people in the rural areas that had no capacity to eat to buy red meat and various other, milk and various other kinds of animal protein, didn't have it so much in their diet, And when these populations migrated into the cities, they developed all the serious diseases that we're familiar with, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, all of that. And at the same time in the study, they pointed out that when they removed these people from these diets, that many of these diseases went into remission. So it's a fascinating book. Mm. I mean, this is a world-class book. It's not this is much more closer to pure research than anything in radionics.
Well, if I sound skeptical about that, it's only because I cooked a world-class steak tonight on the grill. It was with a teriyaki marinade, and my guests went ape for it. So that's why
the guy who wrote the book was a cattle rancher. He grew up on a cattle farm.
I know him. Yeah. I know him. Okay, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, right.
He's been on the show a couple of times.
That's
I'm a little skeptical about him, only in that for him it's a bottom line. It's always a bottom line. So good. Now I feel better about my steak. Okay, so
There are things that vibrations. You're talking about vibrations. We don't treat our animals very well in this planet, right? And they got to have bad vibrations at some of the time, right? The way they're treated.
Well, I think that I've heard studies, and I guess I should have looked this up because it occurred to me actually while I was reading your book, the difference between people who have been fed, it's sort of like the argument about getting milk from happy cows as opposed to unhappy cows.
Yeah.
That people who have a meat protein diet, but they get it from free range sources as opposed to, you know, the torturously industrial.
Yeah, it's got to make a difference.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And that goes back to, in some ways, it goes back to also to the way in which the Native Americans lived so long and they lived so well because they seemed to be in harmony much more with their environment, as well as, their diets were built around seasons and the foods that were available in those seasons, even if it included meat. But it was all about it seemed much more in the rhythm of the land they were living in, instead of how we live, which is by and large in contrast to the rhythms and the vibrations of the world that we walk on.
Yeah, and they were more sensitive to when they went out of balance and more aware of what it takes to return to balance. Therefore, you have vision quests, you have fasts, and all this kind of stuff, which isn't really that common today.
No. So, again, we're talking about the secret art, the lost art of radionic technology. You mentioned that there's a lot of people who are making these oscilloclasts today. So who's buying them?
Good question. I mean, first of all, the oscilloclast, I don't think is in its pure form, it's for sale anywhere that I'm familiar with. But you have dialed instruments made by many good manufacturers. Do you want to take this up when you come back after the break?
That's when I know when a guest is in a groove is when suddenly they know when breaks are coming and they feel empowered to be able to do that. That's fine. We'll do that then coming up in a second. But I also want to ask, too, about the creative individual. That's in the subtitle for the book for Duncan Lorre. So what can we do with this to unlock creativity? How about greater personal success? And I will add a story from my own experience, which I think in its own way validates at least a part of radionic technology. Coming up on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. So it's the secret art. It's a lost art, some people say. Maybe even a misused art. It is the secret art of radionic technology. And we're talking with Duncan Lorre. Let's talk about the use of it for the creative individual specifically. All right, we've talked about the healing part, and maybe no one's going to be using radionics to get healed of anything coming up anytime soon. But are there other ways to use this that can effectively improve your life? And what would be the devices that Duncan Lurie would recommend in order to achieve that? Coming up next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. All right, so we're talking about the lost art, the secret art of radionic technology. You write for the creative individual here in the title. You're a creative individual, Duncan Lurie. You're an artist. How can we use this in a non-healing capacity, but how can we use radionic technology to improve our lives?
All right, well, just to jump back 1 second, I actually was out on the Hopi Reservation in the early 1980s, and I attended a rain dance. Now, this is in a place that gets 6 inches of rainfall a year. And I watched the dance. I watched the clouds come in. The next thing I know, the dance was over. Within 5 minutes, the rain was pounding the dirt all over the place. So I said, you know, that's a little too much of a coincidence for me. And you have to remember, too, that in the Native American world, the Navajo used painting for curing people. The creative application of a paint pigment to sand, and then the destruction of the sand, meaning the breaking up of the disease, is used curatively to this day. So people are still using this stuff even without it being called radionics. But I think that there today, what's taken place that's so extraordinary and bodes very well for the future is that these ideas, these radionic techniques, are being used in environmental recertification, pioneered in Germany. There's a number of people there, particularly today, Peter von Bühninger, who has a hardware-software product. I haven't tried it myself. I don't know him personally. I'm not endorsing this as a product of any kind, but I'm aware of what he's done. He has a very well-thought-out and well-researched site. But he has evidence on that site of projects that they've completed with supervision that show that these techniques can be used to restore parts of, you know, the environment which have been degraded. So there's something very important. And okay, I think that, you know, if you couple that with a creative act or an artist using this in a creative way, I think you have a very powerful form of expression. So with lots of precedent in the ancient world.
Okay. So how would one go about using it? What's the protocol? You want to do a painting tonight at you want to be painting at 10 o'clock tonight. What do you do today with radionic technology to be ready for that?
Well, the reason I wrote the book was to give people an idea of the breadth of these techniques and also who was doing what. I mean, a lot of people use this in their gardens. There's a lot of really fine garden applications for this taught in this country. That's completely legal. You have to gain some basic understanding of what it is you're looking at here, even if it's just historical understanding.
Okay. But I mean, what do you do? What device do you put on yourself in order, if you're trying to get your own vibrations to be more in tune with, to paint the greatest painting you've ever painted? Is there anything that you can do actively using radionic technology in the afternoon that prepares you for that night? Do you do it just before you start painting? How does it work?
Well, there are radionic instrument manufacturers that teach radionics. They're in the United States and Canada. I mentioned a number of them in the book. Right this weekend in Louisville, Kentucky, the United States Psychotronic Association, which is a forum for many radionic inventors, is being held. And you can go there and take classes in radionics and learn hands-on application. I mean, somebody's generally, unless you're a naturally gifted healer that's learned this from an indigenous background of some kind, I mean, somebody's got to teach you this stuff. So usually it winds up being the manufacturers of either the hardware, or now there's computerized radionics devices, there's radionics software that you can load into your own computer. I mean, There's even really simple radionic techniques like Don Gerard's book, The Paper Doctor, which I believe was burned, but had an incredibly high success rate and virtually no cost. So you have to see what's out there and get your hands on some of these things and experiment with it.
Well, okay, I'll go along with that, but I'm not any closer, though, to understanding until I do that. So theoretically, then, I would get a device, and it would tell me, you know, 2 hours I spend with this device, and by that night when I start to paint or whatever, it will, my mind will be vibrating at a different rate, and it'll be a better painting.
I don't know that that can be done that quickly. I mean, I've never met an artist that could change the course of their success rate through the, you know, through a few hours of practice in one day. It's not something, if it was really simple to do this, believe me, people would be doing it everywhere. It's a little bit more complicated, unfortunately, and it does require some patience and, again, suspension of disbelief.
Well, the reason why I bring this up is because, and I didn't mean to imply you could buy it, plug it in, and do it. I just meant over time, the idea is that you would have a practice, you would have a rhythm with this, and you would, if you were planning on painting, if you were planning on writing a song, you might practice this before you go in to start to do that, because it'll, it, according to at least some of the claims I've seen, it'll reharmonize you with your, you know, with your creative self.
Yeah, it's like a placebo effect. You actually bring yourself into a state of readiness that you wouldn't if you weren't using that device. You say, let's call it, be slightly critical, but put it in a category that people understand.
Well, placebos often work better than the actual pharmaceutical. So, I mean, I don't.
But well, there you have directed intent by an authority figure, who's the doctor or the institution, and, you know, could be actually a radionic transaction that's taking place and not something random.
Well, the reason I bring this up is because I think, and it was one of the reasons why I was interested in doing this book when I first got it in the mail, is I have a fairly profound case of tinnitus that I've developed, which is in and of itself its own sort of curse of wave form energy in my head that I can't control. And in my case, and I suppose there are variations of this, but in my case, I have deadening of the of nerves in my in both of my ears. I have about a 25% hearing loss now in my right ear, a little less than 10% loss in my left ear. But the tinnitus, it would seem, is a reaction to that hearing loss that the brain is sort of.
It's a ringing sensation, right?
It's a ringing sensation that is created by the brain.
Yeah.
There is no actual ringing going on, but the brain perceives ringing because it is essentially trying to reach out through these dead nerves. It's not getting anything. And so the brain creates a ringing sound out of those dead nerves, right?
Yeah.
So that's right. So I went to a doctor of audiology, and she gave me the first helpful bit of advice I've had after visiting two other specialists who are ear, nose, and throat guys who only looked at the mechanics of the ear and not the relationship with my brain. And what she was teaching me is a technique that actually seemed oddly like radionics. There's a device, and there is a software program in which I am retraining my brain not to get rid of the tinnitus. That can't, she says, that really can't be fixed. But what I can do is retrain my brain to listen to sound differently so that there's a much lower disparity between the tinnitus and whatever else I'm hearing. So effectively, I'm training my brain to drown out my own tinnitus.
Sounds pretty close to radionics to me.
It did. I mean, it really struck me that way because it really was based on the idea that through certain frequencies, certain things I'll be listening to, that the brain will start to hear the tinnitus differently, or rather it will hear other things differently and it'll diminish the tinnitus. And I've had success with it.
Excellent.
It's really kind of curious to me. In fact, what I'm listening to is not sterile frequencies, but I'm listening to sound effects like womb sounds, ocean sounds, whale sounds, that sort of things, which are overlaid with fairly non-engaging, new agey-like music. So very, you know,
listen to these sounds and gradually your mind transforms the tinnitus sound into something more compatible with your psyche?
Almost.
I got that wrong.
Almost. No, I would say that that's pretty close. I think it would be slightly different in that what it's by listening to this mix of sound effects and new age music, the music can't be so engaging that I ever actually think critically about the music I'm hearing. That's really key. It has to be barely music, right? Some barely kind of music with sound effects at the same time. And what it's doing is it's forcing the brain, it trains the brain to search out other sounds other than the tinnitus.
So it draws volume off the tinnitus.
There you go.
Yeah. That's great.
That's exactly
drawing
it.
Energy off of it.
That's what I thought. And
draining,
I thought, well, that's
sort of, you might say.
Yeah. And I thought that's kind of interesting parallel
like
to what you're doing.
That's like rebalancing it, one way of looking at it.
Yeah. So, and there may be other things involved, and there may be some massage therapies and other stuff that may or may not help. I don't know. But that actually is helping. And I have to listen for about an hour a day. So if I'm planning on doing something later on in the night and I don't want to be distracted by the tinnitus, I have to make a point to sit in one place and listen to these therapies. And it really helps. I already have a kind of a toe in the water on radionics, at least in that sense.
Yeah,
I don't know about all the other
senses. It's a very hard condition to address because it's internal, completely internal.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, thank you. Well, that's kind of where I was interfacing with this. So that's where I think, for somebody who wants to, is it possible to use radionics to increase one's personal success?
Well, I was going to mention that radionics is used a lot in veterinary medicine because of the cost of dealing medically with large animals like horses and cows. You can't just walk them into a clinic for a few bucks, So actually this type of medicine has been used with a subject which has no capacity to be influenced through volition or through suggestion, you see.
Oh, yeah. You can't convince a horse with a placebo.
Horse
doesn't understand placebo. So.
And you can't convince a horse owner that the horse is getting better if it's not getting better.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. So when I say success, I mean I think there are some people who are fearful by nature, who are more timid, who want to achieve more, but they feel like they just can't. And there's something about their energy when you talk to them, when you're around them, you can feel the timidity about them. And I wonder whether there's ever anything that's done to try to work with people so that it changes just even their physical, the way that they feel like they exist on the planet. You know what I mean?
I think that it's easier. Radionics has, in my estimate and guess, really, it has a more potential for more people to use it there than in curing, tangible hard disease. You have to have a very skilled person to address a disease. They have to have some medical training, and unless they're just a gifted healer. But when it comes to this sort of thing, where you're just trying to get a leg up on your own life, I think radionics has a lot of potential because you don't have to require really sophisticated equipment to do it. I mean, you could probably do it with dowsing equipment, in fact. It's just a question like you were talking about with the tinnitus of beginning to take your attention in a different direction.
Yeah. Now, when people are using radionic technology, are some of these devices, do any of these devices actually involve sound like what I'm doing? Or is it just radio vibrations, just radio waves as opposed to sound?
Well, Gordon and I used to laugh because we actually – Gordon designed a device called the purr generator, which is based on the cat's purr. And for fun, we added a radionic component to it. I had recently had a hip operation, was feeling a lot of pain in the hip. It didn't go very well. And so the cat's purr is medically well known as affecting bone curative rates. So I would lie on the purr generator and put the intent in the input well of the radionic component of this and actually experience a relief from the pain that was throbbing in around this recent operation. So, yeah, we used to joke that it was the only radionics device that actually did something.
Yeah,
that
like
was produced by, that was produced the cat's purr.
Right. You know,
so
I think
that's actually in the museum right now, down in the Baltimore Visionary Arts Museum on display.
The cat's purr is?
The purr generator is, yeah.
Huh. So people can go there and stand around it
they can go get
feel
right
better
on it if they want. It's so totally open to the public. You can get on the thing and push a button and you'll get some purring right in you. You can actually put a wish in it, too, if you feel like.
I like that. I think that's a really interesting iPhone app.
But there are a lot of sonic radionics devices. In fact, the whole thing that got me interested in this in the first place was that Michael Bradford, a friend now, has invented a thing called the Genesis device, which was essentially an enclosed capsule of sound, which you got into, and he translated the electrostatic charge around the human body into sounds. So the small voltages from the electrostatics would be translated by a computer into musical notes and musical instruments. And that was sort of like an automatic, reflexive form of non-invasive radionics. These devices are common. I think Peter Kelly had one, and we acquired it from him and his son, Ed Kelly, now is a radionics manufacturer, also makes thing called, I think they call it the Betar. So these devices are around, and they're really fun. You know, this isn't something where you sit alone and look at a machine and wonder if it's going to do anything. These are actually very engaging musical sonic experiences as well.
I'm intrigued by that. I also go back to what I said before. I'm curious whether, have you done any iPhone apps with any of these things, any of these ideas?
We were just talking about that tonight, whether there was a radionic iPhone app. You know, I think from my point of view, as somebody who's trying to bring credibility to this, the notions behind radionics, I don't want to get too commercial about it. But
no, you're overthinking that. Let me tell you, the purr generator iPhone app.
Yeah, exactly. Something to just give you a little buzz, right?
No, I really mean that. I'd love to hear that. I take it. I'll give you 99 cents for an iPhone app for somebody like me with the with the tinnitus. That would be an interesting experiment to use.
Well, there's two people in the other room here: Todd Bill and Brian Kane, who are working on iPhone apps as we speak, and I think they're taking this very seriously.
All right. Well, as
Todd,
a guy,
has been working with us for quite a while. He's our website designer and a wonderful addition to our team of researchers. So I think we're going to see something.
I ask for no royalties, but I tell you right now, you'll make $1 million with the purr generator iPhone app. And all you have to do is you have to have kittens, and you have to have adult cats, and you have to have single cats and group cats, because the purrs are different around each one of those. I'm telling you, you make a fortune, and I'd buy it tomorrow. Let's go ahead and get to your questions and comments on radionic technology. Are you a practitioner yourself? Do you have one of these devices? What has it done for you? We'll find out next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett.